Sorry about that.
It's okay. You're ready now?
I'm ready.
Okay. We'll call the October 25th meeting of Sussex County Council to order. I think Mr. Cole's on the way, so he'll be here shortly, I would assume. Mr. Phillips is out of town on personal business, so he will not be here today. Mr. Baker, approval of the agenda.
Yes, good morning. We have several items, suggested changes to the agenda. First, Michael Izzo, County Engineer. We'd like to delete the bid award item. It's not quite ready. And then under executive session, we do not need to hold an executive session today.
Okay. And we also then would need the possible action on executive session item, right?
Yes. Also, we would like to have one other item.
Morning, Mr. Cole.
Under public hearing, we did amend the agenda to reflect the public hearing regarding repeal of ordinance number 1548. It was on the agenda as a 10:30 p.m. and we amended it when we noticed it should be 10:30 a.m. So it was advertised correctly, and it was on our website correctly. However, there was the agenda itself was just had it p.m. instead of a.m. But
yes, and to follow up on that, Mr. President, you may recall a few months ago we had a similar matter where there was an ordinance where the ordinance was advertised correctly, but it was on our website incorrectly. But it was as to a substantive issue on that ordinance, so I asked that it be re-advertised. In this case, all the required advertisements were correct. It was correct time on the website itself. And the agenda did have it listed, so anyone would have notice that it was being discussed today. And I indicated to Mr. Baker that if we would simply amend it as soon as we found it on the website so people would know. And I'd suggest that we may want to, after the public hearing today, we may want to just leave the record open for a day or two so that if there was any question about the time, that clears it up totally.
Okay. Well, I'll take a motion to adopt the agenda as amended.
Second.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver. Second, Mr. Wilson. To adopt the agenda as amended. Any questions? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. In our packet were the minutes from October 18th. Any questions or corrections to those? Hearing none, they will stand approved. Correspondence, Mr. Moore?
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. There are two letters. The first one is from Rehoboth Beach Historical Society and Museum. To Councilman Cole, I want to thank you for your past support we have received from Sussex County Council. Your generosity to the Rehoboth Beach Historical Society has helped in achieving our goal to preserve the character of the community. We have completed construction on the first floor of the Rehoboth Beach Museum and rough framing in on the second floor. The canal overlook is finished, adding another beautiful feature to our museum complex. We are excited to report we have about one-third of the funds needed to complete the second floor, and we have our third $50,000 matching challenge pledge. To date, we have raised $37,000 toward the pledge and expect to meet our goal of raising the remaining funds by December of 2011. Nearly 3,000 visitors have toured the museum, and lectures have treated more than 300 people to images of the turn of the century Rehoboth and stories of the Cape Enlopen Lighthouse and famous Horn family. We now have more than 200 school children visit our galleries annually to help fulfill their Delaware State History curriculum standards. Right now, to ask that you renew your support of the Rehoboth Beach Historical Society. I know that funds are extremely limited in the current economic climate. However, a councilmanic grant of $5,000 again this year would certainly be appreciated, and we'd be matched by our anonymous donor. Again, thank you for all your past support. The second letter is from the Sussex County Foster Parent Association. Dear council members, the Sussex County Foster Parent Association thanks you for the recent $250 donation. We will be putting these funds to good use by offering a CPR first aid course free of charge for our DFS foster parents in Sussex County. Without generous donations like yourself, we would not be able to provide the foster families in Sussex County with the training, family-friendly events, and provisions they need. Thank you for helping us think of the child first. Lynn Stanton, Foster Parent Association President. That's all the correspondence, Mr. President.
And council make correspondence? Mr. Baker, County Administrator Report, or no, 2012 holiday schedule, I'm sorry.
Yes, we have a suggested county employee holiday schedule for 2012 for your review and consideration. It is very similar to the state holiday, with a few exceptions. First, the state of Delaware offers two floating holidays for employees in place of President's Day and Columbus Day, and the state also works a half day on Return Day. The state does not list Christmas Eve as a day off, but to the best of our knowledge, the governor historically has always granted it as a day off. So it matches pretty closely. I think the main difference is the half a day on Return Day, and then they have two floating holidays instead of where we offer President's Day and Columbus Day.
What would be the, anybody on council got any thoughts? We haven't got to adopt this today, obviously, but what would be the thoughts of the, those 2 days, President's Day and Columbus Day, of not making them a countywide holiday, of making them a like personal day or floating day?
On what now, say that again?
The 2 days that President's Day and Columbus Day, okay, versus making them countywide holiday for all county employees, making them a personal day you could take sometime during the year for 2 days.
And then we'd stay open.
And we'd stay open those 2 days. I mean, the state's open those 2 days. I don't know, those are big, big holidays to some people. I'm not sure.
And actually, our local schools are in operation on those days.
I mean, versus the whole county being shut down, if you had give them two personal days in place of those, then they could take them as they choose during the year.
Yes.
But then you got people can come here and do work on that day as far as right, building permits or whatever, you know.
I think we should be consistent.
Just food for thought. Mm-hmm. Just food for thought.
Yeah.
No, I think we ought to adjust it. Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense. We just got to make sure that we don't have enough people take off.
You could work on that. On that
we have to come up with a lottery system or something, I guess, if everybody wants to take off.
And each department head would be responsible to be
right,
to ensure they have enough people.
Mm-hmm.
Enough
people staff.
Well, that could be, yes.
Right.
Just
but
like,
versus having off those 2 days, you could take off two days during the whole year.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I
mm-hmm. It's just, we can.
Can we modify
that? We haven't
got
to adopt that today. We can bring it back and
sure,
everybody can think about that for a week, yep, if you want to. Put it back on the agenda next week and see if they want to do that or not. Just
right,
food for thought, that's all.
And just don't adopt this today.
No, we just keep this, put it back on the agenda, go Robin okay, for next week, and we'll talk about those two issues.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Make a decision.
Yes.
Did you
want
to make any discussion about the council schedule to see if you have any changes?
Oh,
that's
the
second part of this.
That's the second part.
Which is the county council schedule. And the one and January 1st, actually, I think has already been approved for mm-hmm. January 1st, 2012. But as you know, as noted, Mrs. Griffith put this together. We're basically trying to match it up to what we've done the past year. And she does have a note that in the bottom, the council typically takes 2 weeks off in December. However, if we take the last 2 weeks in December and the first week in January in 2013, the council would have 3 weeks off. So.
Mr. Cole would not be happy with that, I tell you.
Oh, I'd hate to see that happen.
We can also talk about that next week. I mean,
sure,
everybody think about it for a week,
think
and we'll come back
it,
and
yeah,
see what you want to do. You want to. I'm sure we're not going to meet on New Year's Day on a Tuesday. That's already been taken care of, right? That's why I said that.
That was already approved.
So the whole issue is, do we want to take off 2 weeks in December or 1 week?
Well, if general folks, if the agenda stays like they are, there probably wouldn't be. It depends on public hearings and stuff, Dave. So we could probably adjust public hearings, but the last two public meetings we were having haven't been real extensive, where we could be done in. We didn't talk like we're talking now. We'd be done in a half hour.
Right. Now, I guess, Mr. Moore, this is, I'm sorry.
No, I just say, so I don't see a big problem with it.
If we adopt, we'll say, these council dates that we're going to be off, there's nothing to say. I would assume that any time during the year, if there's not a lot going on, that someone on council could make a motion to do away with the meeting?
I'm unaware of anything that would prohibit that.
Sure.
The only problem would be, Mike, we don't know this. We don't know today to cancel next week's what the agenda is going to look like. So we don't have that lead time to be able to do that effectively, I don't think. So that's
Could we do that, Mr. Baker and Mr. Lawson? I mean, do we have the ability? I mean, yes, I'm sure you know pretty much what the agenda looks like for next week. I mean,
right. You do. One concern you might have is public hearings are scheduled in advance.
I understand.
They have to be advertised and all. So if you may have to meet, even though you don't have a lot of regular business,
right,
you may have to meet because the public right. hearing is already.
But if there is no public hearing scheduled
right.
on that date and things are slower or whatever, we certainly could have the ability to do that at some point in time if we chose to, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Would you like zoning hearings scheduled in the morning if we only have, say, one?
Yeah, that would make sense, sure.
Yeah.
That would be a better productive use of our time because for us to have a meeting, look at how much staff has to do to get ready for this meeting, and and it ties up a whole day. So I would, yes, definitely.
That I can agree with, but I don't know about not meeting just because it's a slow agenda.
Well, you can come.
Because people still want to speak to the county council sometimes.
That's true. That's a valid point. And then we have to weigh those things and we talk about it again and see what the thoughts are. But, yeah, I don't see anything wrong with the idea with putting we have, like, a hearing, and it's a very light agenda. Put that in the morning. That way people haven't got to, go to lunch and come back, and staff can go on and do their thing they need to do, that kind of stuff versus, okay. All right. We'll put this on the agenda for next week, Robin. Both of them will talk about it and maybe adopt something then. Thank you very much. Mr. Baker.
Yes. The next item is economic development incentives, and we have two items for discussion here regarding incentives. One is a proposal from a company that is located in Milford, and then the other is some guidelines for discussion. And I have a handout. The first item is a company called Sea Watches, which is located in Milford now, currently employs about 325 in the Milford area. This 325 includes about 80 new employees who were added last March. Their main business is to process clams. They are the largest clam producer in the world. They have obtained clams from the Mid-Atlantic region. They have an affiliated company. They own boats, large boats, which dredge for clams off the coast from anywhere from Maryland up to New England. And then the boats that service the Milford plant come into New Jersey, and then they truck the clams to Milford from New Jersey. They operate two other processing facilities, one in New Bedford, Massachusetts, and then a small one in Easton, Maryland. At Milford, they process, can, and freeze clams. They also make clam chowder and clam juice for sale. They make these products primarily for other companies such as Campbell's, Progresso, Cisco, Red Lobster. They currently must make a decision about expansion, and they are trying to decide whether to expand in Milford or at a location they own in Virginia, in near Accomack. They have asked the state of Delaware, the city of Milford, and the county if there is anything that we could do to help, as you know, in this determination about making a decision. With the expansion, they would further diversify, which would help them in the future. They would add soup products such as tomato soup, chicken noodle soup, and vegetable soups to their products. And our thought is this would help, at least to some degree, Sussex County agriculture also. With the expansion, they initially anticipate 50 to 60 new full-time employees. Now, they would be, they currently employ most of their staff through another company, but they are full-time employees, and we would certainly have to verify that. And at an average, in an average of $10 per hour, plus some administrative staff at higher salaries. Most of their current employees live in the Milford, Georgetown, and Lincoln areas. They are planning on investing about $600,000 to expand their buildings and $1.9 million for equipment if they stay in Milford, if they make the decision to stay in Milford. They currently have an agreement to make the soup, so they're under a short time frame to make a decision. They would like to make a decision by November 1st in terms of Milford or Virginia. They use local companies. Right now, they explain they use some local trucking companies, Pallet Company in Greenwood, Bridgeville Printing Company for canning labels, and another, a local company to distribute the clam shells. The city of Milford has already made an offer to them. And Mr. Richard Carmine, representing the city of Milford, is also here today. We went on a tour. Mr. Lawson, Mrs. Wheatley, and Mr. Carmine, Mr. Bayard from the city of Milford also. We met it for a tour of the facility just to take a good look at it. So I don't know if Mr. Carmine would like to make a few comments about the city's.
So it's in the city.
Yeah. Come on up.
It's in the city, Dave.
Yeah.
It's in the city of Milford.
Oh, exactly. I understand. It's on the right side of the river, huh?
There you go. Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, council members, ladies and gentlemen. The first thing I want to say is I think the county has already assisted us by sending Mrs. Wheatley up there several trips to sit at the table with me and folks from Milford and the state of Delaware. Back in March, when I first, by the way, I worked for the city a long time. I retired a couple of years ago. They had a strategic economic study done by a gentleman out of Florida. One of the recommendations was to hire an economic development director. They really were a little bit hesitant. They've had a few layoffs up there to go out and hire another kind of high-paid position. They asked me to come in and work cheap for a while to see if it makes sense to have someone in that chair full-time. But anyway, from there, when I first started last February, we'd gotten really a late notice that Sea-Watch was looking to put a third shift on production. Anywhere from 80 to 90 employees, and they were looking at Milford and their New Bedford plant. I asked to meet with them, Mrs. Wheatley at the time, State Economic Development. I got them all together quickly, and they responded to my request, which was great. We met with the CFO and a couple other of their managers, and they. In no way, Mr. Baker will tell you even yesterday, they emphasize there's no threat here to Milford or the county as far as employment. They just have to make the best business decision they can. They've got the bricks and mortar, not all the equipment down in Mapsville, Virginia. I visited that that location. Right now it's sitting kind of in mothballs, but it could be started up fairly easily. Mr. Baker did a great job this morning of hitting most of the high points. They actually got from us on this first go-around economic development rates on sewer, water, and electric. They're very, very dependent on sewer and water, and they do use a considerable amount of electric. What we did very simply is, as long as it didn't require more personnel or infrastructure upgrading. We're selling them those three utilities at a very, very much lowered rate. What we did there, we just averaged the last 3 years, and anything over that load with the new load on all three utilities, they'll get a really nice rate for at least 3 to 5 years. So I think that played a little part in their decision. Mr. Jerry Gordon, their CFO, made it clear to us after the fact because, you know, the first thing you hear is they were coming anyway to Milford, not New Bedford. And he assured me that was not the case. You know, they were looking at New Bedford rather strongly because their boats come in up there very close to the facility, the shucking facility, whereas here they come into Atlantic City and they have to truck them a little further. The first thing I found out was when we got the jobs was how it bled into the whole economy around Sussex County and Milford. And probably even Kent County gets, you know, a little bit of a benefit from it. But in Milford, we've always liked Sussex County better.
And
I was, and I also was born and raised here for the last 60-some years. So we really started hearing from people. I made some calls to, like, U.S. Coal Storage. Very large electric customer of ours, been there many, many years. They employ about 50, 55 people. Fairly good paying jobs and benefited jobs. They were ecstatic. You know, when we got that third shift, that increased their freezing for Seawatch by about 30-35%. So it's very good for them. They were even picking up a couple of employees because of that. Anything from the local 7-Eleven, who I talked to, he's selling more sandwiches, more gas. You know, very, very pleased. We found out that about 40% of the workers walk to work. They're living in that close of an area to the plant. The housing there, of course, is happy because we had a lot of vacancy in some of the places that have been tenant-occupied or renter-occupied for many, many years. So it was just a good thing. They told us at the time that they were looking at a contract with another company, which they couldn't release the name, for a co-pack operation. That could be about 50 jobs, and now it looks like it's going to be about 60. We're happy with the product that they're going to be looking at because it's not clam-related. It's all vegetable-related, and if they make chicken noodle, I guess a little chicken-related. And certainly on Sussex County, we can get them chickens. But we have had over the years an odor problem. And they have really worked hard, anywhere from a microbiologist they hired and right on up the ladder and down the ladder to make that go away, and they've made great strides. However, if you impact it with that much more processing, who knows what will be kicked up again as far as odors and things go. So we're very pleased that this is a canning operation. And as I said, I did find out, and I'm not at liberty to say, but it is a very, very well-known soup company, and they're going to be canning for them on this new shift. So I guess in the building of their new building, I can only say that we've given them some tax abatement, certainly a lot of permitting abatement, anything from EDUs, you name it, impact fees. In order to make it a little more, I think, likely that they would give us top consideration in this. And again, as Mr. Baker could tell you, Mr. Gordon was not at all threatening. You know, it was strictly business. He gave Mr. Baker, I've had my second education in clamming. I used to do it, you know, down in the bay, and I've never known anything about the kind of clamming these people do. But it is a sustainable fish. Fishery operation, according to Mr. Gordon, these clams will be there now and forever because of the way they have to fish, the quotas, that sort of thing. So it looks like something we could depend on. What I'm hoping is the canning operation may expand. You know, once they get a reputation, if they do a great job with this co-pack for the next 5 years, probably other people will be willing to do it. Again, let me say, I'm sure the folks in Bridgeville Printing will be happy, you know, getting a lot more labels to print. I'm sure the pallet company will be happy. They even have a gentleman in does the recycling on the pallets, which keep three or four people working. A lot of trucking, security, you name it. Even a couple of administrative jobs will be added if they come here. So if there's anything the county can do, I really don't know. I'm not here to ask for a thing. You can deliberate, and if you've got something you can do for us, we'd certainly appreciate it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Any questions?
Any questions, Mr. Carmine?
No, I think we need to be at the table. I mean, we have to be one of the players. I mean, we got to be there. And the trouble is with Sussex County, things are so cheap to begin with.
That's right.
You know, if we offer a little bit, I don't believe the small amount we're going to offer is going to make a business decision for these people. Because I look at your incentives are $103,000. In today's world, that's not a whole lot of money.
No.
When you read about these other incentives of millions and, you know, all this other stuff. So anyway. So I just think being in Sussex County and the existing facility, and there's a lot of things inherent to being here, is already an incentive. So, but we got to be at the table and be part of it. So,
right.
And I think one of the things that I know we've had some meetings with people in the last year or so talking about bringing businesses here or expanding here, that Mr. Baker and I have been to, Mrs. Wheatley on some of them, Mr. Lawson recently. And the one thing I think that I seem to hear from these people. In some cases, it's not so much that you bring some kind of a large magnitude of credits or money, or it's the fact that everybody is willing to come to the table, from the state to the county to a city if it's in a city, and that they have been most appreciative of that effort of working together, that everybody says, we will do what
partner?
We can to help. We certainly want jobs in this county. The Lord knows we want jobs in this county. And I think we need to be, as Councilman Cole says, we need to be at the table. We need to do what we can do to help these people make that decision to be here. I mean, it's kind of foolish that the state would be involved, the city of Milford would be involved, and we kind of sit back and say, well, whatever.
We have worked up a schedule, and I think I accidentally passed it down. It might be down there somewhere clipped. If not, I'll make
it. Yeah, that's all right.
Copies.
Go ahead.
But just
I'm sorry,
rough,
Dave.
Chip, could you make a copy of this one?
I just want to say, Councilman Cole and President Benson, you're right on target. I mean, it's been said to us, I think it was said to Mr. Baker and Mrs. Wheatley yesterday. The numbers, when you put 90 jobs on the street and you get $130,000, let's say even $150,000, it's not a lot of money. And they can save more by doing more. More production they do, the more utilities they use, the more money they're going to save in that production. But they, Mr. Gordon said it time and again, what really, really, even up in the corporate, the fact that we're embracing them, that we want them there, and that we're willing to come to the table. You know, we've done anything from having Senator Coons give them a call to the governor setting up a tour there, that sort of thing. You're absolutely right. They said the fact that they feel welcome and they know the community and the county and even the state is going to work with them really does reflect at the upper levels.
Sure. I think we've heard that quite a bit in the last year or so, that people have been very impressed with that thought, that everybody's willing to stand and say, you know, how can we help you? You know, we
right.
don't have, as George said, we would have a great big checkbook to write you millions of dollars or whatever, but
mm-mm.
we're willing to be involved and do what part we can do. You know, I mean, some of this stuff, if you talk about, you know, discounting on the taxes or things like that, if they don't do anything, you would get nothing at all.
Right.
So if you give them something for a few years, then you start getting that money, you know. I mean, it's...
Mm-hmm. If you make a penny on that new load instead of 4 cents, it's a penny you'd have never had.
That's
so,
exactly
you know,
right.
Good.
That's exactly.
So they're going to expand now. They're going to. They're not building something new, are they?
Yes, they're
are
actually
building a new
six or $700,000 building.
Building. Okay.
Yeah.
I thought maybe it was just another. They were going to run another shift.
Plus,
okay.
close to $2 million in equipment.
Okay, and where is what port are they going to use? Atlantic City?
Yes,
they're
going
to continue to use that?
They come in to Atlantic City.
And Milford is not no place in Milford is convenient?
No, not to bring in that size.
Too big of a
trawlers and
uh-huh.
so forth
okay.
together, too large.
Okay.
So and it's probably more economical than running the boat to run, you know, the 18-wheelers into the community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's our proximity to the major markets of Milford to get to. You know, New York even, but Baltimore and Washington and Philadelphia. I mean, there's so many people within 2.5 hours of.
I can't believe Virginia would be better.
This is the when if they expand in the soup business, our hope is that they would use some local sources of vegetables and chicken, poultry, and all, because that's what this expansion is about.
There used to be a cannery on every corner,
not
right,
clams,
Sam?
It's about
okay.
Soup.
Yeah. It's about
used to be.
Who could object?
Farmers' business used to be cannons.
Yeah.
Yes. Any more questions, Mr. Carmine?
Nope.
No, great. Now, thank you very much for coming
for your time. Robin, you know, you have my name, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Does Fish and Wildlife know their kitchen?
He has your number.
Fish and Wildlife know their kitchen 12 million cans of clams a day? A year, I mean.
They are controlled by federal maritime agency. Their clamming is controlled by that group. Out of the fisheries.
That's all the clams.
Yeah, it
million,
is.
12 million cans.
And Councilman Wilson, that was when I first met with him, I said, how can you bring in that many clams? And, you know, there's other fishing groups out there. How can it last? And they went through how they're seeding and all that sort of thing. And they, like up in Newfoundland, they've not been allowed to clam for many, many years because of a red tide many years ago. And they feel that's all past now. And I guess there's just, you know, a lot of clams up in that area, which they, you know, they'll have at their disposal.
You talk about when you used to go clamming down there. If you caught 100 clams, they was ready to take you in.
That's right. And they better.
Over 100.
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's like I think the same thing about crabs. You know, Sussex County, you know, we all like our crabs. I don't know how they sell as many as they do. I don't know how they keep fishing them. So, thanks. Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Baker, you have something to present about the.
Thanks.
For this particular project, correct?
Yes. These are just some ideas. And our goal, as Mr. Cole said, is basically just to talk to them, tell them. If the council was interested in, would consider something and then come back at a later date to the council we'll, of course, explain to them the other benefits of Sussex County, low taxes, close to or proximity to the major metropolitan areas, of course, and training. Basically what our thoughts were, if we tried to look at revenues that would be affected, county revenues that would be affected by an expansion of their plant. And first we looked at property taxes. Again, not a big number, about $600 a year would go to the county. We called the school district to see if they would be willing to match that. We haven't definitely heard back on that. Building permit fee, because it's in town, we charge a relatively small building permit fee. It's like $2,700 on that amount of construction. Then we talked also about an economic development loan. We have a program that was put in place a number of years ago that we could use if they're interested and if the city of Milford is interested. Or we have some funds in an economic development fund that were set aside years ago that possibly could be used. But basically, these are some ideas that we've put together to talk to them if the council has interest in this. Then we would come back to the council at a later date with final amounts, assuming they decide to come to Milford.
Right.
You know, and this is, you know, we have some work to do on it. But it would, you know, basically it's about $800 a job, about $40,000, but it would be over a number of years. And the company, if they say 3 years from now they got out of the soup business and cut their number of staff, then it would stop. You know, we wouldn't continue with, you know, for instance, waiving the county property tax on the new construction. And we're not waiving the tax that we already have it existing. We're just proposing on new construction. So just some ideas we thought if the council was interested, we'd further pursue. And let them know this week that we are or aren't interested in helping. The Delaware Economic Development Office has also indicated that they will be offering something, and we realize that they're a much larger player in this, you know, than we are, because we don't have our direct revenues aren't really affected like theirs are.
Well, I think, at least what I'm hearing here, I think everybody at the table agrees we should be a player and at the table this thing.
We should be, absolutely.
I think I don't see anything that's on this that you gave us that just jumps out and says this is not a good idea. Mm-hmm. I would say that you and Mr. Lawson certainly should move forward and, you know, meet with them again and talk to them again and see what we can do to help this project come to fruition and move forward.
Yeah, I just have a question. The building permit fee, didn't you say that all this was going to take place in the city, in the town?
Yes,
it's in the city. It's still a county fee.
Okay, we still have a county. You're talking about waiving the entire $2,700?
That's in
or you
this,
haven't come up
as
with
an
specific
initial
numbers?
Proposal,
okay.
Yes.
It would be interesting if we could see a comparison between Massachusetts building fees and taxes and everything.
Sure.
Just by being in Sussex County, it's an incentive to avoid those expenses you see elsewhere. I mean, it's amazing when you compare what we have in our fee structures here. So,
and we're friendlier.
So, I mean, we are.
We're very friendly.
Without doing anything, we offer a big incentive.
If you two would proceed with that, we'll be. And if we could, Dave, I know the next thing you got is just a general discussion about development incentives, but can we just kind of stop there?
Sure.
And it's past 10:30.
Yeah.
Well, it's not past 10:30 p.m. It was past 10:30 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
And move into our public hearing that was advertised. And we'll turn it over to Mr. Moore when Mr. Guy gets things all set up there. Thank you, Mr. Carmine. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Mr. President. This is the time and place for a public hearing to adopt an ordinance to repeal the existing election districts and to adopt new election districts. I'll be making a presentation. Mr. Dick Carter is here as well, who is a consultant on this matter. We will briefly explain the ordinance and the purposes to be accomplished by it. And after we complete our presentation, the council will have an opportunity to ask questions in order to clarify the council's understanding of the ordinance. After that process is completed, the floor will be open to comments and questions from members of the public. If any member of the public wishes to be heard concerning this ordinance, you're required to make this statement from the speaker stand. And before making a statement, please state your name and address. I would, before we start the presentation, I'd like to give a special thanks to Buddy Lynch, Chip Guy, and other staff members who helped put together the presentation. We do have maps around the room of each of the individual districts, plus the county at large. I have also placed on the podium, or excuse me, in front of each council member, the PowerPoint presentation. And last time we did this, there was a question about some of the coloring wasn't as good, so we ran off the colors for you in each individual map for the council members. They have also been given at the back of the room too for everyone to be able to pick up, as well as the program. This is partly Matt. Items that we had gone over before, but for the public hearing, I think it's important to go over this again. The population of Sussex County is 197,145 based on the results of the 2010 census. Redistricting is required every 10 years following each census to equally redistribute population among the council districts. And given the 2010 census figures, each council district must be within plus or minus 5% of an ideal population of 39,429 residents, containing no fewer than 37,458 residents and no more than 41,401 residents. The need for redistricting, why are we going through this? Well, two of the five current council districts are outside the bounds of the acceptable deviation based on the 2010 census figures. District 1, Mr. Vincent's district, is below the deviation, thus creating the need to expand its geographical boundaries. District 3, Ms. Deaver's district, is above the deviation, thus creating the need to contract its geographical boundaries. neither district is adjoining, requiring a minimum of three districts to be altered to put all five districts within the acceptable deviation. The goals of the process are, one, the impartial process managed by legal consulting staff. I mentioned when we did this before, many of you know my background and involvement in previous redistricting. Mr. Carter has also been involved in many of the redistricting processes for the state Senate and has representatives and the council before, and we're of opposite political persuasion, so we have the good impartial balance. We wanted to change the council districts as little as possible. We did not want to undo what the voters have chosen. And to do that, we wanted to avoid placing current council members within the same district, keep together communities of interest, look at both current and historical trends and data, and ensure increases in population match increases of representation. And in this case in particular, we needed to look at the area east of 113, where much of the growth has occurred. The next shows you the redistricting report and what our plan looks like. And as you can see there, yes, it is tough to see on that overhead. But if you go to the next slide, and it shows the demographics. And as part of the demographics, we wanted to look to see if there was any populations that were going to be strewed by our proposal. And there was not, if you look at the different population subgroups. And as I pointed out before, as you look at this, I believe in each of the districts between the parties, there's a slight edge towards the Democratic Party in each of the five districts. In the next slide, we start with District 1, Mr. Vincent's district. And our overall process necessitated starting here. And because of population changes, this district had to expand to capture more residents. The only options really were to shift the boundaries north and east. If we had shifted south, it would have placed two council members in the same district in conflict with our stated goal. The most significant change that occurred here was movement of Bridgeville from District 2, Mr. Wilson's district, to District 1, which is Mr. Vincent's district. This district is wholly contained in western Sussex and includes Laurel, Seaford, and Bridgeville. This is the only district that we have that is totally west of 113. The next, we go to District 2. And on District 2, On District 2, we had to move east because of the population that was lost from the Bridgeville area. We had to then pick that population up going east. And because of that, we captured residents that would make up for that shift. The district shifted to east of 113. It already had a portion of it east of 113. But it incorporated the areas south of Milford. This thusly became the first of four districts with more than 50% of its population east of 113. And in fact, the numbers show that 56% of the population, based on the 2010 census, lives east of 113. Next district is District 3. Because of the population increase, this district geographical boundaries had to contract. We wanted to change, keep this within our stated goal of making as few changes as possible. Obviously, with the geographical limitations to the east, the changes were achievable in the northern part of the district, namely in the Milford area. And of course, this was also necessitated by Mr. Wilson's district moving east. This is the first of two districts with this proposal, with 100% of its population east of 113, and it's the second of four districts with more than 50% of its population east of 113. District 4 Mr. Cole's district was already within the mandated deviation, thus required no changes. It is the second of two districts with 100% of its population east of 113, and the third of four districts with more than 50% of its population east of 113. And then District 5, it was already within the mandated deviation, thus required no changes other than slight adjustments warranted by new House and Senate overlay lines. And again, that involves the potential election district areas to make sure there was not the small, tiny blips. It's the fourth of four districts with more than 50% of its population east of 113. And 54% of its population, based on the 2010 census, lives east of 113. Summary, because of the population changes, two of the five districts were outside the required deviation. The proposed maps avoid any two current council members from being contained within the same district. For the first time in history, four of five council districts have a majority of their constituents east of 113. Three council members would continue to represent areas along the Atlantic coastline, districts 3, 4, and 5, and one council member, district 3, would represent areas along the Delaware Bay coastline, and no municipalities have been divided. And that concludes my presentation. Are there questions from the council?
Well, it's changed because Laurel used to be divided. So now Laurel's not being divided?
No changes in the Laurel area as far as the line is concerned.
Right.
What's that? No changes?
Excuse me, Mr. Carter, would you come up to the podium, please, and identify yourself for record? And this is Mr. Carter, who worked on this as well.
I'm Richard Carter. I'm a resident of Millsboro. What I was saying was that as far as the districts 1 and 5, there were no changes in the line in the Laurel area.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure whether there's any part of Laurel town limits that are in District 5, but my impression is that there are not. But if there are, it hasn't changed in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So you're talking about town limits. All right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And if there are no other questions from council, you can have a seat, Mr. Carter. Would members of the public that would like to address this issue raise your hand and come forward, ma'am? And please go to the podium and give us your name and address, please.
My name is Joe Klinge. I'm from Rehoboth, the Rehoboth Beach area, and I'm representing the League of Women Voters. We have a statement we would like to put before you. The League of Women Voters commends the county for providing the opportunity for public input in the 2011 redistricting process for the first time in history. This is a significant step in the right direction. Our disappointment comes in the missed opportunity to reflect communities of interest in this process that occurs only once every 10 years. There are an infinite number of ways to draw lines in any redistricting process. What is critical is to identify in advance the criteria or goals to be used in judging the most appropriate maps. The League undertook a major study of redistricting principles and practices beginning in late 2010. Following background research, the first step in that process was to develop criteria that supplemented the legal requirements. It took five drafts before we were satisfied that our criteria were appropriate. The most important of these criteria was that of recognizing communities of interest. Communities of interest comprise groups of people living in an area that have similar interests. Similar interests are especially important to prevent fracturing groups across districts in a manner that dilutes their voting strength. Communities of interest can be based on race or ethnicity, age, or on other factors such as rural, farm-related, or manufactured home communities. They may be based on social and economic interests such as media markets, culture, or jobs. The concept of communities of interest is widely used throughout democratic nations and is highly regarded by judges in any litigation over redistricting plans. The League then made presentations on the redistricting process in three public forums and nine additional civic groups, and sought suggestions for perceived communities of interest at each forum. We then developed 12 variations of maps and recommended one that protected all the communities of interest identified in our meetings with members of the public. It also left each incumbent council member in a separate district. The concept of communities of interest appeared to be considered as possible input, though not by name, by Mr. Moore in his earlier June 28th council meeting presentation. However, the recommended map and report presented to council on August 9th seemed to equate this concept with municipalities. We were pleased that the proposed map does protect municipal boundaries. However, municipal boundaries are not the same as communities of interest. The proposed map was based on different criteria with different results than the League's recommended map. The key criteria used in developing the map proposed by Mr. Moore included change council districts as little as possible, do not undo what voters have chosen, and avoid placing current council members within the same district. The proposed map does protect the Long Neck community and the Georgetown area and does not split any municipalities. But by changing districts as little as possible, the map ignored such significant communities of interest as the Cape region and the quiet resorts. Instead, it retained District 5 that spreads from the beach communities, South Bethany, south to Fenwick Island, and west of the Maryland line. It split the Cape region so that the Lewis area remains in one district, while the rest of the Cape region, Rehoboth and Dewey Beach down to Bethany Beach, remain in a separate district, and it further separates Bethany Beach from South Bethany. We believe council should have compared the map developed by the League of Women Voters with that presented by Mr. Moore and chosen the one that best reflects communities of interest. The League map does change current council districts more than Mr. Moore's map that was drawn to protect incumbents in 2001, most of whom are no longer on council. But our map did place each incumbent council member in a separate district. As a separate issue, it is unclear how the goals and criteria of the proposed map were developed and adopted. These goals were the most critical aspect of the entire process. They determined the outcome. They deserved to be discussed fully in a public council meeting. We believe they were never discussed in public. If more than two council members had any input into these goals, the Delaware Freedom of Information Act will require that they be discussed in public. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And can we have a copy of that for the record?
And you already have a copy of the map.
Yes.
Thank
you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak in this regard? Is there anyone else that would like to speak in this regard? Seeing none, Mr. Vincent, the public hearing on this matter is closed. However, as I'd indicated earlier, due to the fact that there was the typographical error on the meeting notice for the time, I would request that the public record be remained open and that people can deliver comments either by traditional mail to the county council office or to our website. And I've been told by Mr. Guy that the website is up and available to take our emails immediately. And Mr. Guy, could you come to the podium and let us know what that address is so the public would know?
redistricting@sussexcountyde.gov. It's the same email address that we used for the first two rounds of public comments, and those messages will route to me, and then I will see to it that they go to the county attorney for
okay.
the record.
And could you repeat that again, please?
Redistricting, redistricting, @sussexcountyde.gov.
Thank you.
I just want to say, since the record's still open, it's a shame that we had to divide Ellendale, not the town, but the entire district in half. It's going to be difficult. People are going to think that I represent them, and it will be Mr. Wilson. but we'll work with it. But it's a shame that that community of interest was not in one district.
Yeah, and I think discussed this before, mm-hmm. one or the other. That is the one area, and we refer to it as Old State Road, between mm-hmm. Old State right. Road and 113. And in looking at the overlay with the State Senate and the House of Representatives maps, would have created an ED that had too few number of people. And matter of fact, I asked Mr. Carter to go back and look at that after that was mm-hmm. brought up and to see if there was anything could be done. And no. he assured me that there was not. We could not do that. So,
okay.
But, yes.
No, I was just going to make another comment as we talk. When I looked at this proposed district's demographics, the interesting thing is if you look at the Democrat, Republican, and other, which would, I guess, mean independent,
right.
it is awfully close.
Yes.
I mean, the numbers all line up, so I don't think there can ever... anybody could ever say we politically tried to gerrymander any districts or anything, because actually it seems one party actually is in you know, has the edge, but it's a slight edge, and then the independents are all, again, all about equal. So it's very interesting how that came down. It's the other part about the of demographics is much more difficult, you know, when it comes to those other issues. But when it comes mm-hmm. to politics.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can point the finger and say we played politics with the lines and all that stuff.
Well, I spoke at Henlopen Landing Saturday, and I got another question. Why do we only have two people representing the coast?
You have three.
They don't think so.
Well, the voters did. They voted for that person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I represent.
In that district, did they not?
Well, tell them to get more people moved down there. They'll get more.
Moving along.
I try to do the work of two
we
people.
We will, the public hearing is closed. Public comment will be open until
noon on Friday.
Noon Friday. Is that Mr.
Yeah.
Guy?
Mr. That's Guy.
That, Joe, next time he asks you a question, yes. say you don't have enough people. No, just
yeah. Sam, I do the work of two people.
After. Yes, I would like Mr. Guy to give the regular mail address as well,
right.
instead of just the email.
For those who do not have email or cannot email, they can also send by standard mail to the clerk of the council at P.O. Box 589, Georgetown, Delaware, 19947. It should be addressed to the clerk of the council, and they would need to be postmarked or in hand. How do you want to?
In hand.
In hand, then, by Friday, close of business.
At noon.
All right, noon Friday. So we get the mail in the morning Friday, so if someone has a comment that they want to submit by writing, then they should do that. They can also fax it. We want to give that number, 302-855-7749. Okay. So they can fax, mail, or email, but everything has to be in hand by noon Friday.
By noon Friday. And yes. then at noon Friday, the public comment will be closed.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Carter.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Now then, Mr. Baker, we're going to come back to you. We didn't forget about you.